hour of it this as well. Don't worry. It's yeah, I'm honored to be here.
Good man, good man. Look, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me, but you know so we can have a little bit of a chat and these lovely people can listen to you know, bits and bobs about you and your backstory and stuff like that. I think first and foremost, what I want to do is you know, we're aware that you are an amazing footballer, now a coach, and we'll touch on all of that in a little bit. But what I wanted to do first and foremost was to talk about Jordan and talk about the foundation as well. How did you get to know Jordan? When did you first sort of meet him?
Yeah, well, I met Jordan when I was playing at Huddersfield Town. It was my second spell back at the club. So, you know, slightly later on in my career, Jordan was there as one of the young, sprightly, sort of under 21 development players. And along with a few others, it was a time in my career where I was, you know, struggling to get back into the first team, and I'd had a few issues with the manager, and it wasn't quite going as well as I'd planned on my return to my hometown club. So I ended up getting almost sanctioned to sort of the younger lads' dressing room. So when the first team were going out away on pre-season tours to Portugal, I was left with this group of young lads, Jordan obviously being one of them. And I just struck up, obviously, a fantastic relationship with Jordan and the other lads as well. And there's others that are, you know, Matt's on the call now, you know, that were in that same kind of group. Yeah, we just hit it off straight away, as everybody did who met Jordan. So it was, yeah, and we kept in contact, obviously, when we left the clubs and carried on. And we had a group of pals that kind of just stayed together, really, and then we're all involved, obviously, with the Foundation Trust as well. So it was, yeah, it was just a coincidence of meeting, I suppose, being in the right place at the right time,
and
managed to touch my life. Yeah,
and I think that both me and David had the, I mean, David's been talking to Mel and you know, on and off for a little while, and I was introduced to Mel last Thursday. I can't believe it's been nearly a week, to be fair. It's nuts. It's just shot by. Where we recorded our radio show, which went out on Monday. To say that I've been touched by the entire thing, I think you'd have something be wrong with you if it hasn't touched you in some way. To be touched by, you know, the whole situation and what's happening thereafter and the trust and what they're doing. I had a little wobble whilst we're doing the radio show. I mentioned it to Dave. There's a bit in it, and I've not listened back because I never listened to the radio show because it's got my voice on it. I don't listen to my own voice. It's not pretty and I don't like it. But I go very quiet. And that's partly A, because I've got a sore throat, but B, I couldn't talk. I literally, because I thought if I start talking, I'm going to lose it. It sounds silly now, but honestly, at the time, I had to have a quiet word with Dave Atchison, and I'm really sorry I went really quiet. So talk to me about your involvement with you know, tell me a little bit more about the Jordan Sinnott sort of Foundation Trust.
Yeah, so I mean, it was kind of just a complete sort of just a natural thing that just kind of just exploded off the back of collecting football shirts. I mean, that's kind of to where it started. I'll give you kind of the sort of the backstory through it. I mean, we after everything that happened and Jordan passed, we decided to start collecting football shirts. So we looked at trying to get, I don't know, maybe we could get, you know, maybe every one of the Football League, or could we get just the Premier League or League One or League Two to donate as a shirt, you know, and we'll put Sinnott 25 on the back and, you know, it'll be something nice that we kind of do together as a group. And I think, you know, Mel touched on this, but in terms of keeping a unit together with a focus, with something to you know, bring something positive to ourselves as a group and other people as well. It was brilliant for us because we, you know, WhatsApp group was set straight up. You know, everybody's in it talking to each other, which, you know, just talking to each other is a massive healer. So we just cracked on and we said, you know, let's go, let's see if we can get some shirts. So I think within 24 hours, we had all of the 92 Football League clubs. We had some grassroots clubs that were starting to send us a few things. We had, you know, we had letters coming in, and it just snowballed. And it almost got out of hand in terms of what we could manage, what we were expecting. There was bags of shirts coming, you know, to me at the club that I was at, to Matt Crooks, to Danny Ward, coming in to Mel. They were coming from everywhere. Before we know it, they're coming from America, from Australia, from everywhere you could imagine. And I think we ended up with, you know, on top of all the really nice ones, the local grassroots teams and, you know, teams from that were sending us a little shirt with a you know, handwritten letter, you know, from one of the players or the coaches. Even those were probably our pride and joys, yeah, you know, yeah, better than the Man United ones and the Man City's. It was the ones that you could just see, you know, and then they'd send us pictures with, you know, the kids, you know, all lined up behind and holding the shirt and stuff. And you know, they were just magical. And it just kept going. And we ended up with it was just over 1,000 shirts altogether.
Wow.
It was just incredible. And then, you know, we it was brilliant. We had those, you know, draped. They filled the whole of the Bradford City suite for the funeral, and they covered the whole ceiling. You know, they were draped across all the way. And it was when we all walked in, it was, you know, breathtaking when we walked into that room to see that, and you just see the scale of support. But but also it was just nice for everybody else to see what we saw, really, and to know Jordan, you know, in some way that we did. Everybody just jumped on board with it, and it was fantastic. And off the back of that, we kind of said as a unit, we've got to keep this going. This can't be it. You know, we've got to go bigger, beyond, and we've got to go better. So we did. And you know, as a group, there's 13 trustees, and you know, we're working our way through it. Thank God we had Claire, who's on the call as well, to help us and to basically hold our hands all the way through it and make sure we're doing the right things, and more often than not telling us that we shouldn't be doing something, which was brilliant, which was exactly what we needed. And we managed to grow the foundation, to grow the support that we'd had. We were very fortunate that we could reach a lot of people straight away with a few of the lads, obviously myself and the other boys that play football, and we could kind of really get the word out there quickly and to a lot of people and generate a lot of support. When we just kept going and from then sort of jumping forward through the pandemic and everything that was going on, it's been difficult, and a lot of work going on behind the scenes in terms of the logistics of it with all the charity, you know, getting it to the right stages in terms of the official status and all that sort of stuff has been a constant struggle for us all, really. And it's taken a lot of time, and it's been tough. But then now we sit here today as a fully, you know, registered charity, which we've only got in the last couple of weeks, which has been massive for us, a real kind of milestone. And another platform for us to really kick on and move forward. But you know, we've been raising, you know, money as and when, as we've been going through. We've had Ali Lee, who's on the call now, did 5K a day for 31 days straight and raised over £12,000. We've had another group of guys that did 6 marathons in six days, I think that was it. 6 half marathons in 6 days, again, raised over £11,000. We've been doing raffles and loads of little bits and pieces. And then looking towards being a grant-based charity, where we can now say, right, we're in a position where we can, you know, accept the grants, have a look through them, go through the processes that they need to go through, and then start giving money away. You know, the money that we've raised over this last 18 months has just been phenomenal, and we just need to start spending it. And so that's where we're at the minute, and we're looking to raise as much money as we can, because we're getting grants in constantly. So any support or anything that we can get is fabulous, because it is going straight. It'll be ready to go straight out to people that need it. You know, and that's what's happening. So it's going off to so many different school teams, you know, kids that need transport to sporting events. So everything that we're trying to do is geared around, obviously, the sports and what sports brings to life, especially to the young children, to vulnerable, and to people that want to be touched through sport, like we all are. You know, everybody has a little, whether, you know, what matter what sport it is, everybody you know, gains some kind of relief or some kind of enjoyment through the powers of sport, and being active and being with other people and being with your mates and, you know, playing a game and being competitive. You know, everything about it is healthy, you know, and it really is. And we want to help take that to the kids that are really restricted, you know, and that really struggle to have that in their lives. Because, you know, we know, you know, I know as a parent, you know, how important it is for your children to enjoy the sport and enjoy being outdoors and doing things with the mates and stuff. So we're hoping to carry that on, and then, you know, where it takes us from there, we're just going to go on a journey with it. We're going to enjoy it while we're doing it. I think that's key, is enjoying what we're doing. We are doing that, although it's hard work, you know, and it's tough at times, but, you know, we get through it, we make decisions and we move on. And like I say, it's lifting a lot of us in different ways as a group. Even Mel, through her charms, has managed to get Ian Wright on as a patron as well, which is, you know, incredible to have that sort of support as well. And like you said, you know, you spoke to Mel before, so you know that you can't say no to her. So so it's that's perfect. And
I've emailed her today. She asked for something and I've emailed her today. So I've just done as I'm told.
That's it.
Well, yeah, you were late.
I was late. You're right. Yeah. Nothing like getting publicly told off by Mel, is it, really?
But you know, that's what we've got. We've all got Melvin. We've all got her looking over all of us. You know, and that's, you know, she's fantastic, and she is doing an amazing job, because she's in a position that nobody ever wants to be in, and she is staying strong. She is the light of every room, which is no surprise after knowing Jordan. So she's she's taking us from strength to strength, and we're more than happy to just try and hold on somewhere and be any kind of support we can to her and the rest of the family. And then, you know, we're excited and looking forward to going on this journey with her now, because she is committed. I'll give her that. She's very, very committed to make this work and to make it, you know, a brilliant story off the back of a terrible tragedy. She's helping directly, you know, thousands of lives. And I think that's really, really impressive.
I've got no words but to other than to just agree with you. I met her for over Zoom for about 90 minutes, completely blown away, absolutely. And you're right, I think that what you're all doing, being led by Mel, but what you're all doing, born out of an awful, awful tragedy with regards to this foundation trust and what you're doing with it and the grants. I think Dean's here. You know, he's had some money from the trust already, and I know that, you know, you're looking to do more and more and more. It's one of the reasons why David has chosen that the Jordan Sinnott Trust Foundation is going to be Koi Sports charity for next year. And people that know me know that I met Dave over a couple of years ago. It was either over a coffee or a pint. Still to this day, don't quite know or understand which one it was, but let's just say it was one of them. It was probably a pint. And as soon as he sort of said, I want to do this with grassroots sports, I want to get businesses, I want them to talk with each other, and I want them to use their membership and plough that through to grassroots sports so that we can help local communities and other sports, whatever sport it may well be, do something that will enable young individuals or old individuals, you know, it doesn't matter. And I was in from day one. And through that, as a byproduct, I get to see the radio show with Dave. I get to talk to amazing people on a daily basis through the work that I do anyway with charities, and nonprofits, and businesses. But through the work that I've been doing in Koi Sports, I'm now sat here having a conversation with John Stead. You know, and I still remember, I can't remember whether it was the goal or whether it was when you were playing for Bradford. I can't remember whether when you beat Chelsea. I can't remember whether you scored or not. I can't remember. I just remember it being one of those brilliant FA Cup games where I wasn't really interested in either team. Don't take that the wrong way. But it was one of those games where you were just on the edge of your seat. It was just brilliant. So I'm having a little fangirl moment. It's fine. It'll wash over in a minute. I think that, so if we sort of, we'll come back to Jordan and Jordan's in a little bit, but let's talk a little bit about John Stead. Footballer supreme.
I'm retired now. I know, so that's it. I'm done and dusted. The boots are hung up. So yeah,
But would you not say that you may well have hung the boots up, and you alluded to this earlier on by saying you were doing your coaching license? I know that you're in the US now.
I'm back at the minute. Actually,
you're back.
I'm back. Yeah.
Just for Christmas?
probably not. Don't know yet.
Okay. All right. Okay. But you're doing your coaching license, so that you've got this expert. You've got a wealth of experience, and is this the route that you want to become, like a manager? You want to coach? You want to what's the thing for you?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, like you say, I mean, to get 20 years out of a playing career was brilliant, and obviously more than I ever imagined, really. And I'm extremely proud and lucky to have the career that I've had and the life that I've had. And I think to take the decision to retire was obviously difficult. I was very conscious of retiring from the game and not the game retiring me. And, you know, I've been very lucky with injuries and stayed fit, you know, relatively fit throughout my whole career. And it just worked out really well. I had my last two seasons at Harrogate Town, which were a fabulous club. In those 2 years, obviously had the pandemic as well, which was difficult. And especially with them at the time in my first season being a National League club, you know, the financial side of that impact is huge, and has devastated many clubs. We managed to scrape through it. We managed to get promotion, you know, that first season with them. I managed a trip to Wembley, which I'd not managed in the previous 36 years. So finally managed to play again on the Wembley soil and won, got promoted, which was brilliant. And then the following year back in League Two, back in the Football League at the age of 38 was, you know, obviously, you know, something that was a big achievement for me. And we had another cup run and managed to get to Wembley again and win again. So it was, it all kind of culminated in my last game of the season, which was my 700th career appearance. So it literally, wow, it was just the perfect time to stop. There was no way I could carry on and finish on 701 or two. That was it. I'm done. So I retired at the end of season. So that was May this year. Immediately jumped into an opportunity to go and coach as an assistant coach out in America, with Hartford Athletic, it's the USL Championship, which is kind of the level below the MLS. So sort of our, if you like, the American version of the Championship, that's kind of the level structure. Nowhere near the standard of the championship, but that's in terms of one and two, that's kind of how it works, how it runs down. So it was, and it was just a completely new experience for me. I'd been coaching for a while, but not a full time capacity, and so much still to learn. So it was quite a leap of faith in terms of I'm just going to go and do it, gain as much experience as I can, and come back a better person and a better coach for it. And obviously with some more opportunities here, there, wherever. Really, it was just a case of I'm in a fortunate position where I can go and do that. So why not? And I had fantastic support from my family. To go and do it, some more than others. Ali's on the call now, who doesn't agree with me going there, but apart from that, my wife and my kids were brilliant, and she held the fort for me down back in the UK while I was there for 5 months, which of course is not easy with two young girls. So I had people around me that gave me the opportunity to go and do it, and I think that's what families do, and it was great. So now I'm back, looking at some opportunities in terms of carrying on coaching. But I think longer term, I want to coach. Whether that turns into management or not, I don't know. I think I'm quite well suited as an assistant at the minute, because I've got good experience in terms of the playing, of what a dressing room should look like, of how players react and what they like, what they don't like. So I think I can give a manager a good insight into the elite game and what it looks like as a model, really, and how it can be successful. So I'm enjoying exploring that more at the moment. And then, off the back of that, I'll see what happens. But I'm doing my coaching. My next stage is my UEFA license, which I'm doing at the minute. That'll finish around May, June next year. And then after that, I could go and do the pro license if I want, but that's quite a big step up to do that one. So I'd probably need a couple of years more experience really before I can jump into doing that qualification. But that's it really. That's kind of where I'm going. I'm excited now because I'm starting a new career. So at 38, I've retired and started again, which is strange, I suppose. But I'm excited for what's coming next, and I want to build a successful career on the coaching side as I did on the plane. So it's nice to have a fresh start in the middle of your life and think, I'm starting from scratch again, and I'm excited to do that, to be honest.
So what hooked you into football? Because I know what mine was. I mean, I went to, so my parents are from Birmingham, and my first match was watching Cyril Regis at the Baggies, and that's my dad's club. So Derek Statham and that era, when football pitches were just brown, they weren't green, they were just brown and muddy, even in the summer. And I would have been five, and I was like, that's it, that's what I'm doing. I want to be that. I didn't get there, obviously. So for you, what hooked you into football? Why football?
I suppose my story is probably very different, or maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But I mean, you look at kids playing now, they're playing from 5, 6, 7 years old. There's kids going into academies that are under 8s, under 9s, and it's just, I find it madness, because I was just not involved at that time. So I was a really keen swimmer, and my daughter's doing the same now. So I'd be up, most mornings swimming before school, and that was my sport, was swimming. So up until the age of probably 10 and a half, 11, I wasn't really into football at all. I had no real recollection of watching it much. My dad isn't into football at all. He's a truck driver by trade, and he's into motor racing and fixing his Land Rover. That's it. He tries, bless him, even now he tries to sometimes, try and repeat something that he's heard on the radio regarding football or something that I've done, and pretty much all the time he gets it wrong, but I just let him have it. I don't correct him. I just let him, Tottenham City and all this. I let him have it. It all really changed for me was around sort of that age. And it was to do with family. So my stepdad came on the scene, who was an avid football fan, hated watching swimming with a passion. I think he'd rather watch paint dry. So for him sitting in a pool for an hour and a half on a morning or an evening and watching me swim up and down was something that I don't think he was quite interested in. And he said, you know, Jonathan, can you not play football? Have you ever tried playing football? So I was like, well, no, not really. I'll have a go at school and take it from there. And I think I played a school match around that same age, and he came and watched. And you know, my mum tells me the story that, you know, he kind of nudged her and said, "Hang on a minute, he's pretty good. Like, you know, why is he not doing this instead of swimming?" So it was So from there I started playing more and more, and within 12 months I was playing for my local grassroots team, Hepworth United, which was kind of I think it was under 11s, I think, which was my first you know year of playing football. You know, scored loads of goals, getting 6 or 7 a game and loving every second of it. And, you know, I thought this was amazing. And just off the back of that, the following season, I got asked to go down to Huddersfield Town just to, you know, sort of their old centre of excellence, which are all academies now, but it was different kind of platform then. Got invited to go down, didn't have any kit, you know, I didn't really have any stuff. So luckily one of our neighbours was Kieran O'Regan, who, you know, if you remember him, but a player, he gave me some boots, some size 11 boots. I think I was about size 7 or 8 at the time, but he gave me some size 11 boots, which were all we could kind of get our hands on. I remember my stepdad had gone down in I think I had my white PE t-shirt on to go for a trial with Huddersfield Town, and out the back of the car, he pulled out an old England football shirt. I think it was one of, you know, the blue and white, I think it was one of the Euro ones, might have been, I can't remember the year, but and he gave me the shirt, and obviously I was like, oh my God, I've got a football shirt on. So I felt $1 million straight away. And you know, that just touches on, obviously, you know, like the shirts that we've sent out to you know, all across the world, all across Africa, you know, that like what a football shirt means to people is extraordinary. You know, it doesn't matter what shirt it is, it's a football shirt. And that's the power that it has. And it certainly had that power on me as well. You know, I had a football shirt on, so I felt $1 million. Had my trial and got picked, you know, and that's how I came into football. Swimming had to disappear. You know, I couldn't do both. You know, starting to train 2 or 3 nights a week with the academy and stuff, and went through that. And, you know, by leaving school 15, 16, you know, went straight into the academy setup. And so from leaving school, I went straight into full-time football, and it's been that ever since. So, circumstances, family circumstances, definitely the grassroots, you know, the Sunday league scene, which I loved. And at times throughout the first 2 or 3 years was begging with them to let me go and play on a Sunday instead of on a Saturday with the academy, just because it was more fun. But you know, that's what it did, and it got me into it and gave me that chance. And luckily, it fell right for me.
And when was your first? So obviously going through the academy, and there'll have been like under 16s, under 18s, through doing all of that. What was your first? How were you with your first game, and who was your first game against? Because I can't remember. I read my notes earlier, and I've now conveniently forgotten.
Well, he's probably struggling if you're asking me as well. So I think that's what the first game was. Ali will probably know. Do you know Al? He'll probably know. I think I remember my first goal, I think, was against Knox County, if I remember right. But yeah, I mean, I've only ever had one hat trick. I know that. And that's a bit of embarrassing. I've never had one in professional football. I think I've had 19 braces. So I've had 2 19 times, but never made it 3. The only one that I did get was in the academy, playing up at Emley FC against Newcastle United. And I scored a hat trick in that game. And I've actually still got the ball. So I'll have been 18, no, maybe younger, 17, 18 then.
Last year then, John, yeah.
Just a couple of years ago, as you can tell. If I'm honest, I can't remember my first game. I think I remember standout moments through my career, but in terms of
what would be some of your standout moments during your career then?
I think, although it doesn't stand out as a memory, I think making my debut for my hometown club and playing for Huddersfield Town was a huge occasion, but I can't, you know, when you've just got that thing, but you can't actually picture myself being there. Whereas other moments throughout my career, I can remember it. When I went to Blackburn Rovers, you know, I can remember a lot of vivid things about that in terms of my conversations with, they took me there to watch a game. They played against Chelsea and had a conversation with Graeme Souness, who was a manager at the time, who signed me in sort of a footwell, you know, behind the stadium after the game. And he kind of said to me, well, what do you think? And they got beat. And I was like, yeah, it was good. Yeah. He's like, I think you could handle that. And I was like, yeah, of course I can. You know, like, just blagging it, basically. Little things like that I can remember. And then I scored the winner against Man United, which obviously was a massive moment. Stepdad, huge, and Ali, huge Man United fans. So that was that was a great one. It split the household, but it
was... always good to do that.
Yeah, it was, yeah. So that was interesting. But yeah, that was, you know, a huge occasion. And even now I can... You know, I can picture myself scoring the goal. I can, you know, I can taste and feel how it was. You know, so there, that's brilliant. That I'm trying to keep hold of that. Obviously, with all the heading over the years, that'll probably disappear. But, yeah. And then further down my career, you know, towards the end, like the time that I had with, you know, I mean, the Bradford game that you mentioned. Yeah. I can remember every second of that. Yes, I scored and set up two. And it was a magical, magical day. You know, it was FA Cup. You know, it was FA Cup. That's what's meant to happen. And we'll go down as one of the biggest cup upsets in FA Cup history. You know, it was one of those occasions where for one game out of my 700, I was a 10 out of 10. Everything happened for me. Everything was right. You know, I did everything right at the right times. I was 30, it was 2015, so I was 32 at the time.
I remember you being interviewed before that as well, and I just have little bits of it, and I sort of where you know the commentators or the media were going, you know, what a fairy tale story it'll be, you're 32 and it's Bradford, and you know, and it was just sort of like they really hyped it up, and then it happened. Yeah. It was just like, what?
Yeah, it was set up.
Game.
It was set up to absolutely just fall flat on our faces, like, you know. And you're right. I remember I did like a little thing for BBC Productions before, and I had like this like little interview in a cafe like near the training ground, and you know, went through it all because I'd done all right in the FA Cup throughout my career. I scored quite a few goals, and yeah, it was kind of like, well. I honestly saw it as kind of, it's like my last song, really. You know, I'm back on the big stage again, which I'd you know, missed for sort of 7 or 8 years, you know, not being in the Premier League. And then suddenly I'm back on that stage, and it was just a case of, well, you know, let's see if you can still perform. And to this day, that was my best ever performance. And it happened to fall on that occasion, on that day. So, you know, it was just one of those things where, you know, it just, everything just fell into place, and it was really magnificent. I had loads of my family there, which was great. My youngest daughter, she's 11 now, and she came on the pitch, you know, after the game, and she can't remember any of it. You know, she can't remember a thing. And, you know, it was just, you know, I think every player had pretty much 50 or 60 tickets that were, you know, we took family members down. It was magnificent and a real highlight. And then, like I touched on before, you know, two trips to Wembley and to win both times, having thought pretty much I'm never going to get to Wembley unless I break in. So I was like, well, you know, they were just amazing, amazing things. And again, it was just, in fact, my first trip to Wembley was very shortly after Jordan passed. And, yeah, you know, it was, you know, obviously really difficult for everybody. And, you know, we had like, they were doing like cutouts and stuff, you know, when the COVID was out, and you could get a cutout of somebody and bring them to the game and stuff. So bless him, he's in spare wardrobe at the minute, Jordan. But I got the cutout. I got the cutout for, you know, to take him down.
might have tickled Mel.
I cut out for him, and he came down, and it, you know, there was a few there, and you know, the our physio, blessed, you know, you know, put him in the crowd behind the goal and stuff. And, you know, we won, we got promoted and it was great. And I went up and sat with him and had a picture with him and stuff. And, you know, just, I was a complete mess, by the way, but which was nice because it was broadcast, you know, across TV, which is always great, isn't it? But yeah, it was you know, just really emotional. It was just, although it was horrible, it was just something nice that we kind of sort of, you know, he'd have been there, you know, in any normal circumstance, he'd have been there, you know. So it was great to have him, and yeah, just little stuff like that was nice, and it was just a great occasion. Not for me. I managed to get some of my other family members to the game as well, but I won't go into details as to how I managed to do that. But that was great for them to see it as well. And it sealed off my career really well with the 700 on the last day. And, you know, the club Harrogate got a shirt with 700, you know, Stead 700 on the back, and got a picture with all the players together just as I came off. I started the game. You made me captain for the game as well. Came off with about 10 minutes to go, and, you know, the game kind of stopped and everybody applauded me off the pitch. And it was on, obviously, on, I think Jeff gave it a mention as well on Soccer Saturday and stuff as well. So, yeah, it was brilliant. It was a fairy tale ending, really. And I couldn't have asked for anything else. It all luckily just fell into place, and it became a lot less stressful and worrying.
And with that, and I think that, you know, I think that the fact that you retired, you know, as you did with the 700, Jeff's seen that and he's now decided that he's going to hang up his broadcasting boots, yeah. Isn't he?
I've heard that was why.
I think that's what it is. We'll start the rumour here now, and it'll just filter out, and that'll be what it is.
Yeah, I did score a lot of goals against Hartlepool as well, so he's probably delighted. When he used to call me the old warhorse on his broadcasters when I'd scored. So yeah, he's seen it all now. He doesn't need to see anything else in the game, does he? So he's going to retire like I did, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. I've got some questions coming in, so I'm going to read some of them out. David, right, Dave Johnson Rayner. Okay, here we go. How gutted are you that you never played for Leicester City?
Ooh, I don't know if I'm gutted. I did very nearly play for Leicester though. I'm trying to think who was the manager when I went there, or where I went instead. It'll have been 2007, I was at Sunderland and I ended up going on loan to Derby County. But I went and met, it might have even been, no, it wasn't all the way, who was it? I can't remember who the manager was, but yeah, I went and actually went to the stadium and met the manager and went through everything, sat up in one of the boxes in front of the pitch and discussed going on loan actually. And did the same with Derby County. Billy Davis was the manager there, and I ended up signing for them for 3 months. So I was close, but never quite happened. I didn't want to play anywhere near Vardy, obviously, or anything like that, because he would really make it evident how slow I was. So I was trying to stay clear of him.
Yeah. Are you encouraging your daughters to play football?
Yes and no, really. I think my eldest daughter, like I say, she's really keen. So she swims four or five nights a week and one morning. So on a Tuesday morning, we have the joys of setting our alarms for 4:45. And I take her down to swimming, which is great. And that's for somebody who's been used to working 4 hours a day for the life. So it might not be too stressful for anybody else that's worked for a living for the life. But for me, it's difficult. But she's enjoying that, so I'm happy for her to continue with that. My youngest daughter, she's 7. I'd say she's probably one that might sort of get into it. I took her to the little soccer tots thing that she went to for about, you know, 4 or 5 months, and then she said, "No, I don't want to do this anymore, Dad." And then a couple of months after, you know, like they do, you know, why aren't we going to football anymore? I was like, "Well, you told me you didn't want to go." So she's probably one that I think would be interested more than my eldest. You know, she's 11 now, and it's too cool to play football for some reason to her. But I'd love her to be involved a little bit more. I'd like them both to be. But we'll see. I'm not sure how it'll pan out.
Who's been the best player you've played with?
The best, in fact, the best player I've played with was Tugai, who was at Blackburn, midfielder, was incredible. And he was towards, when I played with him, he'll have been really towards the end of his career as well. But he was a real character, technically unbelievable. You know, you do like the little rondos where, you know, trying to get the ball off him and he'd just roll it around on his feet, Meggy, and, you know, effortless skill. He was brilliant. And a character as well. He used to nip into the boot room and have a quick fag at half time and before the game as well. So that was showing his old school, his old school characteristics. And he'd still run the show on the pitch. You know, he was top class and a nice guy as well. So I think he's probably the top in terms of you know a really good, really really good player, very good.
Dave Allen's asked, an ardent Bradford City friend of mine asking, when are they next going to win a game? Gosh, Dave.
Yeah, they're not doing too good, are they? They've had a lot of draws, haven't they, as well? But they're, they're struggling a bit at the minute. I'm not sure on that one. I'd have to speak to a few people closer in the camp. But yeah, you'd like to think, I mean, they're a huge club. I had a great time there. Loved every second of it. And they've got a huge support. The fan base is fantastic. Mm. You know, Bradford's not too bad, I suppose, ML. But it's, they're a good club. And I hope they get some success. I really do.
Kate Dawson's asked, what skills does football teach you that will help you off the pitch, i.e. possibly with life?
Oh, that's good. Yeah, good question. I think one of the main ones is discipline, especially in terms of if you want to get to the top, like, you know, you've got to dedicate your life to it. And I've had to do that. You know, there's a lot of sacrifices along the way. This will be my first Christmas where it's actually a Christmas. You know, obviously Christmas is the busiest period for footballers. So, you know, playing on Boxing Day and New Year's Day. You know, so that there's restrictions there in terms of your diet and alcohol consumption, of course. But
that leads me to a question. So obviously, if you've got a game on Boxing Day, you know, the rest of us, me, eats his own body weight in food on Christmas Day. What about when when you've got a game?
Yeah, so it's varied over my career. So I think in the early days, you know, I've gone from skipping Christmas dinner altogether and just having a single portion of spaghetti bolognese or something while everybody else is having the Christmas dinner. Towards the end of my career, it's gone to pretty much I'm eating everything apart from the alcoholic beverages. I think it depends where you are and what stage you are in your career. I think some things, you get to know your body. I think that's important.
Yeah.
You know, you understand what you react well to, what you don't. I think that's really big. And the other thing that I do want to touch on that I think, well, it can help and hinder, but I think if you get it right, it can really help. And that's in terms of how you react to disappointments and, you know, and negative feedback and criticism. I mean, football is a game of opinion. So it's more often than not that there's going to be a lot of people that think you're crap, you know, and they're going to tell you openly, whether that's to your face or whether it's on a computer screen. So I think if you can figure out how to process that or ignore it or do whatever you need to do, to keep that away from affecting your mental health or your life, then I think that's a really good life skill because, you know, predominantly whatever you're going to next isn't going to be as cutthroat of an industry. It's not going to be as judging, as negative at times as what the football industry is. I think it's highlighted every day. You know, the people are having issues with stuff like this. So yeah. I think that's another big thing. And I think the more open and the more there's help in terms of groups, the PFA are great. Obviously there's the Mind and there's loads of organizations that are really, really helping, and ex-players as well that are really getting involved and helping younger pros, ones that haven't seen it much and that, you know, it's coming to them more and more as they're getting more successful, you know, how to really deal with it.
I've got a question that's come through, and I'm going to come back to something in a moment about the PFA. And I know we've only got a few minutes left, but this question has come through. He says, what is your nickname and why? And then it said, from Mel.
Well, I've got a few nicknames. I know exactly which one she's referring to. But, yeah, so...
even before she put that bit from Mel, I knew exactly that it yeah. come from.
I'll give you a few of them, and then I'll give you the one that Mel's on about. So, okay. Over the obviously Steady's one that I've had over the years. Steady. When I was at Sheffield United, Stuart McCall was the assistant, and he used to call me Stan. Stansted Airport. So he used to call me Stan for a couple of years. I've had Sven from mates at school because I look Swedish. But then the one that Mel's referring to is Gazza. So I'm known as Gaz to all my family and friends, really. So especially my friends, or at least my friends that I'd have social activities with, in terms of alcohol and dancing and whatever else. So basically, they call me Gazza because I could play football and I could sup as well. I can drink. So... That's where that came from. Thanks very much, Mel. That's where that came from. I'm probably better with my alcohol, but not as good with the football. I think that's probably where if you put us side by side.
What's the tipple of choice, Mr. Stead?
Guinness all day long. And it's something that we've had all sorts of stuff with the charity for that as well. We've had Gin for Sin and getting everybody to put pictures of Guinness on and. Just promoting alcohol, basically. So that's where we were going with that. Sometimes it's nice to have a pint in it. So and he used to love his Guinness. He used to love his singing. He used to love his dancing. Probably Guinness. But yeah, thanks, Mel. That's just what a few people call me. That I've had the pleasure of seeing him drink and dance.
The Gin for Sin. Is it Feb 14? Am I right? Have I got that right, Mel?
When did we do that? It was Feb, wasn't it?
Is it Feb 14th? She's on quiet.
She's on mute, that's why.
She's disappeared. Anyway, I'm sure.
Sorry, I'm here. Sorry.
All right. So the Gin for Sin, was that, it's February, isn't it?
Yeah, February the 14th.
I knew I hadn't killed too many brain cells since we'd spoken, but I just thought I'd check. Honestly, that's lovely. The PFA thing that I was going to touch back on, John, I know we've only got a couple of minutes left, obviously there's been a change at the top, and I forget the gentleman's name that's come in, but he speaks about 6-7 languages. Have you seen a change with the PFA and through the PFA over the last few years, or positive change for inclusion in all aspects?
Yes, it's a tough one to answer that. Just because the with me specifically, the PFA have been brilliant. I've not needed them for loads of stuff. But when I have had questions, I was a PFA rep for Harrogate for the last year. So every team has a player delegate. So, I'd get a lot of the information sent to me, and then I'd distribute it to the players. If any of them had any issues or with anything, they could always come through me to get the right contact details for whatever they were looking for, whether it's education, help with something. I think they're very good. I think they could be a lot better. I really do, and I think they're lacking in some areas. I think they're trying in terms of everything that they're doing around the current topics. They're trying, trying, but I think they've got a big platform where they can help a lot more. So I think it's going in the right direction. I think the old guard seems to be moving out, and I think there's a new. A new era kind of starting with the PFA now, which I think is going to be a good thing. I can't knock them because they've been brilliant with me, but I have heard stories from other players, obviously, where, they feel they've been slightly let down or, they haven't done enough, but it's very difficult. It's such a huge organization. It's very difficult for me to generalize, the whole lot. The people that I've dealt with at the PFA have been great.
Okay. All right. Well, look, John, it's been fabulous to talk to you. It really has. You know, I could probably carry on chatting to you for most of the evening, if I'm being honest, possibly with a Guinness in front of me. But I think that, you know, I think you've had an amazing career. And it's been really good to sort of talk to you about that. But more importantly, you know, as well, is to hear about Jordan some more, and to hear about, you know, the amazing work that the Foundation Trust are doing as well.
Right. No, thank you. I really appreciate having me on. It's been great to chat. And again, apologies I couldn't be here sooner tonight. Mm-hmm. But any time in the future, I'd be more than happy to come and chat about anything, obviously relating to our Foundation Trust, football in general. I know Matt Crooks is on the call as well. He'd be another one to have a good chat with. He's
absolutely.
He's taking up where I left off. He's a superstar now, so it'd be good to have a chat with him, I'm sure.
So that's the next one lined up then. Thanks very much for that. Mr. Johnson Rayner, back to you.
Thanks ever so much, John. I really appreciate that. That's John Stead, not John Woodcock. I don't think that you were talking
about. I knew the thanks wasn't for me. Don't worry.
Yeah, I think for me, it was an obvious choice. As soon as I spoke to Mel, and this whole thing that you were mentioning, John, about nobody says no to Mel, she didn't really have to try. However, if she had to twist my arm, then I'm pretty sure that would have hurt and I'd have gone yes anyway. But what you do and what everybody else does involved with the Jordan Sinnott Foundation Trust is amazing. You kind of need that profile to help push things forward. And because it supports such an amazing cause, which is very similar to ours, I think that's fantastic. You should use your assets clearly, which whatever it is that you're pushing. Mm. And I think for me, looking to support in 2022, we're going to look to support as a membership, things like Gin for Sid. Really looking forward to that one because I've never got drunk on Guinness, so that could be an interesting one. We're really looking forward to doing things like that. And really, it's a case of, if you need us, we're here, but we will always be around like a bad smell, probably. To anything that anybody needs from within the S25, just ask, because I can then go out to our members, who are a lovely bunch of people, and we can probably do something to help, because they're from an array of different professions and things like that. So, you know, just an offer from me and our members to you guys. If you need anything, just shout. I really appreciate you sparing the time, John. I really, really do. And it's a great story. I love that whole thing about you never looked at football until you were 10 or 11. It was brilliant. And that shows the power of grassroots sport. It's so important that we support grassroots sport, because wonderful things happen if you do. And for everybody, whether it's a top of the game.
No, it's a pleasure. And likewise as well, if obviously myself and some of the other lads that are involved with our foundation, if there's anybody else that you're connected with where we might be able to help with something, whether it's to raise any awareness with anything or a few appearances or anything like that, just get in touch, because obviously we'll reciprocate that and obviously help in any way we can with some of the other organisations.
Thank you, John. I really appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody, for coming. I know some people have had to shoot off relatively late. Just look after yourselves, guys, and look forward to seeing you all towards the back end of the month. If you can make the lunchtime one, I can be bothered. Let's face it, it's Christmas time. But then rolling forward into January, you'll have heard quite a bit from me between now and then with the different things that are going on in 2022. We're going to hang around afterwards for 20 minutes, half hour, for what we call after hours, just for a chit-chat if anybody wants to stay. Otherwise, thank you so much for coming. Thank you so much for everything you do for Koi Sports and our communities. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you. Good night, everybody.
Cheers, all. Have a good Christmas and New Year.
Cheers, Dave.
See you, Dave.
He's not there.
See you, Dave. Thanks. Thank you.